Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. I hope that you've had a great day so far. Parts of the upper Midwest trying to dig out after the weather patterns. It was quite a line of storms. I mean, tornadoes and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Just really a pretty wild a wild weather system kind of blowing through the area.
Yeah, we hope people are safe and are all dug out now. I actually hand dug out this morning. My plow is malfunctioning at the moment, so
okay.
My arms are a little sore.
Well, it's, you know, we do need a workout now and then.
So, yeah. No, it got me thinking about just paying somebody to do it, right?
Sure.
Some people do that.
We're going to talk money today, and I guess maybe, I don't know if that wasn't one of the questions I was going to ask, but we'll have to ask our guest, what's the going rate to have somebody shovel your walk, I guess, if you need it, like that. But before we get to today's conversation, it's going to be a conversation about money and investments and all those things, but just reminded that Faith Radio has the app now, Faith Radio app, and I just saw a report today. I thought, want to make sure people know that if you're not an early adopter like I am on many things, now it's okay to jump in now because there have been hundreds of people that have already downloaded the app.
Yeah, so we got the bugs worked out pretty much.
That's right. So if you don't have to feel like you're the first one because, in fact, you may want to just get on the train before it, leaves the station. But anyway, you can download the Faith Radio app today and start enjoying all the great programs you love. You can there's a link on myfaithradio.com, or you can just go to your Apple App Store or Google Play or with the Android. Where do you find that?
Yeah, the Google Play is in there. Yeah, it's kind of a standard, and that's free as well. So
that's right,
Faith Radio Network. Search for that.
So. Yeah. I'm still carrying the brick cell phone.
From the '80s.
It goes to my bell bottom, so I'm going to stick with it.
All right.
Our friend Ken Franke has been advising people about finances and money, and doing that on the radio since the late '80s. And we're honored to have him back with us. It's been a while since we talked to Ken. He was the founder and president of Kenneth Franke and Company, speaker and writer, and has been presenting biblical principles of finance for many years. He's been the financial analyst for SRN News in the past, and a regular guest on Moody Radio's Primetime America, and he's a certified financial planner, a member of the Financial Planning Association, and he, as well as Kingdom Advisors. In fact, he was a founding board member, past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, and we've had Ken on in the past, who cares a lot about how we use the resources God has entrusted to us, and he has children and many grandchildren. So, if we run out of money talk, we'll talk grandchildren. But Ken, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Neil, it's great to be here after that introduction. I'm always concerned that after that it sounds, sounds like I know something and that the first person is going to ask me something I have no idea how to tell them.
Well, we'll open up the phone lines anyway just to see, kind of put you to the test a little bit. So, by the way, our phone number is 877-933-2484. So if you have some questions about maybe it's investments or it's a debt or any number of those things, what's going on in the economy, what your portfolio maybe should look like, some things you've been wondering about, a little free financial advice, and we probably can't, delve into specifics with your exact situation, but we'll certainly give some observations. So give us a call, 877-933-2484, or if you want to send us a note to submit your question that way or comment, it's myfaithradio.com. And then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. Well, Ken, let's start with, we want to talk investments and being good stewards. The Dow started the year with a pretty substantial drop. And it seems to me I heard, it said that how the Dow starts is sort of how the year develops. So does that mean we were kind of looking at an unstable, sort of an up and down market this year?
Well, yeah, that's a good good question. Starting out, You know, the January barometer, you know, when the markets go up for that in January, they go up usually for the year. They go down, usually go down for the year. Well, I mean, there's a certain amount of facts to that because people don't just say that. It actually happens a good percentage of the time. But there really isn't a good reason for it. You know, just because it happens doesn't mean there's a cause and effect, you know, tied in. I'll tell you what, it's also true that the fourth year of a presidential term is often good for stocks. That has more grounding, actually, in fact, because administrations, you know, will sometimes do all they can to boost the economy before the election. And another thing is stocks generally do better during Democratic presidencies for the very same reason. They're more likely to put money into the economy to stimulate it. So maybe it was going to be a good year, you know, despite all the predictions for volatility and everything else. So we'll have to see.
Well, I guess, I mean, the fact is that you're a financial advisor, a financial planner, doesn't mean that you necessarily have any better handle on than the average person, right? I mean, it might be good. It might not be good. I guess the question is, how do we make the best use of the resources we have? Are there markets always go through cycles, but are there some kind of foundational principles that you always recommend in terms of here's how you want to create and sustain your portfolio?
Yeah, Neil, it's, you know, the stock market's volatile. And to your very first question, I probably have less insight than anyone else, so you can take that for what it's worth about where the market's going to go. You know, but stocks are risky, and investors, you know, expect higher returns for taking on the extra risk of investing in stocks. Now, one thing, you know, we haven't seen real volatile markets for 4 or 5 years. We've had an amazing run, one of the longest bull markets in American history. And so last year and this year with the volatility we have seen now, you know, actually I think seems and feels more volatile to the average person than it really is. I mean, this is pretty normal stuff. We just haven't had that for quite a few years. You know, but today, you know, really there's so many risks in the that could cause the markets to go up or down dramatically all over the world. You know, problems in Europe, problems in Japan economically, we have the Middle East. We have an over-leveraged world today, and the problem is that when you're over-leveraged, you're less capable or maybe saying more vulnerable to shocks, either political or financial, all over the world. And we're living in that type of time, and with the media today, everything is right in front of us, and people have this trigger finger of making decisions immediately. So, yeah, that can cause markets to bounce along or around a lot, and that's why we always come back to sound biblical principles. You know, God's principles work in all economies. He gives them for investing. He gives them for budgeting. He, you know, doesn't call it budgeting, but he gives us all the principles we need in order to operate from those guidelines and receive God's best, whatever that might turn out to be. But most people who apply God's principles turn out better than they would have if they hadn't.
Well, give us, before we take our break, maybe just give us a summary when you have an opportunity to talk about here's God's principles. I mean, maybe there's just two or three, or there's multiple ones, but kind of when you boil it down, how do you summarize it?
Yeah, I think there's four. I mean, there's four issues. I mean, there's a lot of practical application, but, you know, you can only do certain things with money. I mean, you can spend it on yourself or other things. You can give it, you know, if you want to charity. You can borrow with it, you know, and, you know, borrow money with it and pay back the debt and the interest and those kinds of things, or you can invest it. And the more you spend in any one of those areas is going to affect how much you have to do other things. But as long as all of those things are within your income and you have a margin, you'll be saving money. And you know, the Bible over and over encourages us to believe that if you save money just periodically, doesn't have to be fast, slowly, over time, you can become more financially independent of what's going on in the world than if you don't do that. For some people, they can do that and live in a very large home. For other people, they can do that and live in a mobile home. But whatever your standard of living, most people have the freedom to make choices to live within their income, and that's usually the determining factor of how their finances turn out over a long time.
14 past the hour, talking with Ken Franke today, founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. And he is a certified financial planner. He's a past founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He's a good friend of Faith Radio, and we're happy to have him on with us today as we talk investments and stewardship and some of those things. We've got a couple of questions queued up and ready to go, Ken. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and go to the phones. You might have a question about, you know, investing or saving or stocks or, you know, any number of things. Maybe it's helping your kids or not helping your kids. We'll talk about it. 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or you can send us a note at myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page and use the email link there as well. And we'll talk more money, economics, deficits, debts, interest rates, all those kinds of things coming up in just a moment.
G.
Past the hour, talking today, money, investments, stewardship with Ken Franke, founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. Ken's a certified financial planner. He's a member of the Financial Planning Association, and he's was a founding board member, past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. He and his wife enjoy life in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina, which, as he told me earlier, so it's another beautiful day in Asheville, which is sort of redundant, I think, if you've been to Asheville. Anyway, Ken's on with us today as we talk money. And, Ken, we're going to take Barbara's question first up. Barbara's calling in from North Branch and going into retirement soon. Barbara, you're on with Ken. Go ahead.
Hi, Barbara.
Hang on a second. There we go. Yeah, go ahead, Barbara. Sorry.
Sure. I've been trying to figure out what to do with my 401k money as I go into retirement and I have to roll it into something else. And so we're just kind of wondering what is the safest place where I'll get, keep my savings for the long term and yet have some growth. Otherwise, I'll probably run through the money too fast.
Yeah, Barbara, that's a great question. And I can assure you, you're not alone in asking that. Well, the first step usually to take with a 401k when you retire is to roll that over into an IRA, so that and usually with a brokerage firm, so that you can work within that to invest however you would like. I mean, you can buy CDs, you can buy annuities, you can buy, there's all kinds of things you can buy through a brokerage firm. And you can diversify. But that's the most important thing. Diversify your assets. Understand your risk tolerance. You know, you may have identical financial situation to somebody else, but you have a higher or lower risk tolerance than them. And so your circumstances are usually unique, but how you feel about money is also important. But you diversify for your age. The older we get, the less we want to have in really risky investments. But with life expectancies today, it's wise to have some. My rule of thumb, but not everybody's, but my rule of thumb is that when you are 60, for example, usually you want 40% in stocks or growth investments and then 60% in some type of income investments. And as you get older, you get to 70, then you might reduce that to 30, 70, you get to 80, make it 20, 80, that type of thing. But diversification is important. And any of the independent brokerage firms like Charles Schwab or Fidelity or TD Ameritrade are fully able to not only hold your assets, but give you counsel in what to do with them, you know, according to your circumstances. And you can certainly find independent financial advisors to do that as well.
You know, Ken, there is, I think, as Barbara alluded to, it's, you know, it's easy to kind of burn through it too fast. So it's not just when we retire, we take it all out in a lump sum and, you know, put it in the mattress. I mean, we do need to, it needs to keep growing and working for us, right, for several years.
Well, absolutely, and that's why you need some growth investments. It's been for many, many years now, it's been a good rule of thumb that if you have a portfolio that's about half stocks and half bond investments, that you could take out 4% per year, maybe 4.5% per year. Again, you would adjust that for the total amount, so if it goes down, that 4% is less, and if it goes up, the 4% can be more. But if you do that every year, there's been no period of time in the past 100 years where you would have run out of money. We're in my opinion, in an environment where we're likely to have lower returns. You know, bonds have had a great run because interest rates have gone down and bond prices go inversely, so they've gone up. And stocks have done phenomenally. The last 10 years, you know, we've been in a much more volatile marketplace, haven't had the same kind of returns in stocks anyway. And in the future, there's a good chance with a slowing economy and all the other risks that are facing it right now, we may have lower returns in the past. So even 4% may be high. The best way to really resolve what you can do is to either buy yourself, you know, with some software you can get through some mutual funds, or you can buy on the market through Quicken and things like that, or within a financial advisor, kind of project out how this money's going to last and how much I can realistically take out of my 401k when I consider, you know, my Social Security income or any other pension income, whatever else they may be. How much do I have to take out of here? How long will that last? And that'll give you an idea whether 3% or 4% or more or less is going to be best for you with the high probability of making it last for the rest of your lifetime.
And, you know, along with that, talk a little bit about savings. I mean, obviously, we're not there's not a lot of interest earned at the bank. So how much savings do we realistically need, or do we want to just keep it all in an IRA and just something that's accessible?
Well, first of all, you can have money markets and things in IRAs too, but the really safety comes down to no investment is perfectly safe. They all have some type of risk. You don't always lose your principal in something, but you could lose out to inflation if you don't get much return on your money. That's what's happening to people right now who have CDs and money markets and things like that. So even they have a certain amount of risk. But the key thing with a bank account is that you're going to get your money back. And as long as it's within the federal guidelines where they guarantee it, but you'll get your money back. And the reason you put money in there is so that, one, if you know you're going to spend them out, if you're in retirement, you're going to buy a boat or you're going to buy a new house, and you need the capital to do that. You may want that in cash right now so it doesn't go down. And you may want some out for an emergency fund. So if something unexpected happens, whether it's medical or something breaks down in the house and your car, you can take care of that, and essentially, there's an economic war right now from governments all over the world, governments and central banks. There's a war on cash, and that's why you're getting so little returns. They don't want you to have it. They don't want you to own it. They want you to invest in things that are going to cause the economy to grow. But we need cash for an emergency fund. We need it for expenses that we're going to make, and the price that you pay in order to have that available, liquid like that, is low interest rates. And it's just something, it's a reality that we accept right now.
Andrew, calling in from North Dakota, couldn't stay on the line, but he asked this question. He says, I'm debating on paying off my home mortgage or investing in the market. Can you give me any advice on what I should do?
Well, Andrew, I'm a big believer in getting out of debt. And most of the time, and I don't know your age, but most of the time, especially if you're young, if you aggressively pay off your mortgage before the normal term and then take that payment, whatever the last payment was, if it's a higher amount, you're paying it off, whatever that you're applying to the mortgage, you begin investing. Even if you do that at age 40, that full amount of money, you'll do much better than if you invest less and keep the mortgage longer. So the sooner you can pay off your mortgage and apply money to that, you're usually better off investing at that point in time. Now, what I recommend people do is take baby steps. Maybe try that and see how it works. You know, you start paying down your mortgage a little aggressively, but you also pay some into your investment accounts. and see how that feels. And if you're really comfortable with that, you pay your mortgage down faster. And then that excess money, then the difference, you apply into investment accounts. But I've watched it over and over again. The quicker you can get out of debt, pay off your mortgage, the more economic freedom you have, the more independence you have, and you can, that larger sum of money that gets vested in a regular period of time is going to grow to meet the needs of your retirement.
And I guess that's the key, isn't it? That we don't just pay it off and then not invest that that previously assigned money. That we use that we invest in that in some sort of investment account, right? So it doesn't just sort of populate our checkbook.
Neil, that's a great observation, because that's what most people really do. They see it as free money now. And while, yeah, you can spend some of that, but if you really want to get the greatest benefit for your future on that, you invest it. And you try to have a discipline that pursues that. And if an emergency or something happens that you need some of that, for medical reasons or something, well, you use it. God's provided it, and you use it for that. Because we always want to use biblical principles of meeting our family needs and those things, and investing is simply one of those. But yeah, if you have that, you have to exercising discipline, living on less than we earn, having margin, investing with a plan, paying off debt. You do all those things, your outcome is going to be better than if you hadn't done those things.
Do you have any sort of rule of thumb maybe for home mortgage refinancing? Andrew's talking about paying off his mortgage, but is this a time when we ought to think about refinancing?
Yeah, refinancing is everybody's circumstances can be so different. You know, it's hard to just make, say one rule that's going to work for everybody. But in general, if you can refinance at a low enough rate, that'll make a difference. The refinancing costs are reasonable and low enough, and you don't extend the mortgage. You don't make it a longer period of time. You may actually, if your rate is high enough and the new rates are low enough, and they're pretty low right now, you might be able to pay the mortgage off in a shorter period of time. So, if all those things work in your benefit, yeah, it makes sense to refinance. But if you're going to extend the mortgage term, or have higher payments, or any of those things that are just not going to work to your benefit, it probably doesn't make sense, even if the interest rate is lower. But if you can shorten the mortgage term, pay it off, quicker, get really good financing, I think it's really attractive, good thing to do.
Ken Franke's my guest today. We're talking finances, talking investments, getting some good advice. You're welcome to join the conversation. You have a question or a concern as it relates to money and stewardship, maybe it's investing or it's retirement, we'd love to have you join the conversation. You can do so with a phone call at 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient to simply drop us a note, you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link right there. You can just send your question. Ken Franke is a certified financial planner, and he's a founding and board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, president of Kenneth Franke and Company. That's F-R-E-N-K-E. And we'll talk more with Ken in just a few minutes and take your questions on the money, financing, investing today. Okay. Well, the trouble is when you forget about the price tag, then you end up getting in debt. I'm talking a little bit about the debt. I just saw a report the other day, nationally, federally, it says 84% of the gross domestic production, GDP, will go for debt by 2025. It's 74% now. I mean, it doesn't seem like too many people are talking about the national debt. I want to get Ken's perspective on that. Ken Franke is my guest today, founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. And he's a speaker and writer and analyst on things money, a certified financial planner. Say a word about maybe the federal debt deficit, and then we should probably talk about individual debt, too.
Well, Yeah, debt is, Neil, the elephant in the room, you know, and it doesn't get mentioned. It just kind of sits there, and analysts seem to work around it with all their papers and everything and don't talk about it very often. But, yeah, the national debt just reached $19 trillion, and that's an increase of $8 trillion in the last 8 years. And in that time, you know, the Federal Reserve has added another $4 trillion in stimulus, and yet here we are with 2%. You know, economic growth well below the 4% that money was expected to buy, and it hasn't. So you have to ask, why is that? Well, you know, this is the key thing about debt. And first of all, it's not just the national debt that we have to deal with. We have municipal debt, personal debt, corporate debt. And when you add up all the debts and all the future liabilities for Social Security and all these other issues, we're looking at accumulated debt. If a business were doing this and not the government calculated, this is how a business would have to do it if we were run that way. Our debt is over $120 trillion for future obligations and current expenses. So that's something that we're not going to pay off. You know, if something can't be done, it's not going to be done. It's not going to be paid off. But right now we're getting, you know, a certain amount of economic growth. Because we have a flexible economy, you know. People are businesses and individuals and small businesses have the opportunity to make decisions and shift and go where the market goes, and we're able to do a lot of that. But at some point, you know, the cost of servicing that debt, as well as the regulations that we have and the health care now, and it's getting more challenging. We have a high tax rate. The government, remember, never produces wealth. It never earns money. Only the private sector does that. Only the private sector is able to pay off this debt. And as you said, at the national debt, 85% of GDP in a number of years, and all this other debt piled on, it just weighs on the private sector. And, you know, we have a potential perfect storm unless something changes. And, of course, it could. God could change things anytime he wants to, and something good could happen economically. We can never forget that. But all of these things potentially lead to a perfect storm where our economy can no longer easily adjust to all these burdens that are placed upon it. And that 2% economic growth that we're getting now, and frankly, we're the envy of the world because of it, but that could turn to 1% or 0% very easily under all the burdens that businessmen have to work and women have to work under in this country.
And of course, if that continues to slow down, then that just sort of slows the recovery that much more, doesn't it? I mean, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
Yeah, it's the real risk and the fear that they have in most central banks is that this will become deflationary, that people will fear prices are dropping. We're seeing that now in other places. Prices drop, and people, rather than taking advantage of that price drop now, figure, oh, it's going to be lower in the future. I need to save money anyway. So they stop buying, and the economy slows more. And then there's less money to pay down servicing the debt and paying the debt off. And it's just this vicious cycle that you get into. Now, the good thing is if you allow that cycle to happen freely without government intervention, usually it's a very quick process. It's a painful process. There are people that lose their businesses and that type of thing. But you get to the bottom of it quickly. We've done that several times in our economy in the 1800s. And you recover more quickly. You know, the probability is if we had allowed these things to happen this time around, we'd already be in recovery. I don't know that for a fact, but if you look at historical precedent, it's very likely that that would be the case. So the longer we kind of fight this deflationary slowdown, paying down debt, being forced to, you know, defaulting on debt, whatever it is, getting out of this debt, having it worked off, paid off, defaulted on, inflated away, the sooner that happens, it'll be painful, but the more quickly we'll get to an upward trajectory and the economy can grow again. We're kind of in this muddling through, winding down economy that wears on people over time.
Well, debt certainly wears on us individually, personally. Anna from Chanhassen called in, and her question says, if you have credit card debt at about $20,000 and you're age 60, are you better off taking out of a retirement account or investment account and paying it off or keeping the debt?
Well, I would generally say at age 50, you still have a number of years to retirement. In principle, I'd want to pay off the debt. You're not gonna get ahead if you're getting 4 or 5 or 6% in an investment portfolio and you're paying 16, 18, 19% debt on that money.
Now she's age 60. I don't know if that makes a difference. So
age 60. I'm
60.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same principle. You're just later in the process. So I think you may want to more quickly pay that down. And my thinking is, again, like I mentioned earlier, in all of these issues, you don't have to do everything 100%. You can do baby steps, and you can take money. If your retirement plan allows you to borrow money and that's favorable to do that, that may be a better way to do it if you're in a situation with your personal investments that would require you to sell something that you're not ready to sell now. For whatever reason, you can take it from the retirement account as long as you can then pay that back with your investments. As long as that's favorable and you have the investments outside, you can pay it back. That might be the lowest cost way to do it, depending on the taxes incurred when you have to sell something, on the investment side. But I would take baby steps. Every year I would do something and try to have it all paid off by the time you hit 65 and you go on Medicare and maybe 67 in your Social Security. So I had that kind of time frame to do it. And if you really like what you're doing and it really works well, do it all at once. But my inclination is to take baby steps always. See how it feels, see how it works for you, but try to be out of debt by the time you're retiring.
You mentioned just tax implications. Tax is such a big part of our monthly and yearly expenses, but we don't always pay a lot of attention to it. Do you have some maybe recommendations just on how we should be more aware of the tax burden that we have and how we can reduce that?
Well, again, our situations vary, but and here in this example and when Andrew called in and other examples, taking advantage of 401ks, IRAs, any opportunities to put money away that you can shelter from taxes, let it grow tax deferred, and for some people that are younger and are concerned about having higher tax rates in the future, they may want to use a Roth where you put money in and lower taxes in the future. You can put a Roth in now without taxes, and then you pay it later on at a lower tax rate. But taking advantage of 401ks, IRAs, Roths, other contribution plans, always a good idea. I also recommend most people work with either a tax professional or using tax preparation software. It's usually better than doing it by hand because both of them will be able to identify all the deductions you can qualify for. That's one of the biggest things. You just miss those things. And you can also figure out whether aggregate. Now, some people don't have health issues every year that are enough to be deductible, but you may be able to, if you know you have some of those expenses, one of the classic things to do is try to get them in 1 year where you know you can deduct them and take advantage of that. But everyone's circumstances are different, but I believe in taking advantage of everything. They always say tax avoidance, is good and free. Tax evasion is 20 years.
So. Okay. Yeah, let's do the former, not the latter, I guess, if we can.
Yeah.
So, you mentioned Roth or a kind of a regular 401k. It's one we pay tax going in, the other coming out. Is that right?
Right. That's right.
And
the Roth you don't pay tax coming out. You pay it going in, don't pay it coming out. The regular IRA, there's a deduction when it goes in, and then you pay taxes on it when it comes out.
So I guess you have to determine what your tax level will be, right, when at the time you want to start taking that out.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing to judge. Yeah. And they have to keep the laws consistent. I mean, they could change the law, so it makes a great advantage for you to pay taxes now and have it come out free later. But what if they change the law and it's higher? They could change the law where it's not all deductible. I mean, they're free to do almost anything they want to do, and you have to weigh that in the equation.
Okay. Well, let's bring in Pam from Anoka into the equation. She's has some questions about co-signing a loan. Pam, you're on with Ken Franke. Go ahead.
Hi, Pam.
Okay, thank you. Hi, and I was just so blessed to hear there was a
and program on about finances. I'm 62, my husband's 65, we're still working, and our house is paid for, we have no debt. And 5 years ago, our daughter and her husband were encouraged to buy a house with a no-interest loan, and now it's going into foreclosure because they it was a bad investment, and they left the house. They had a Christian realtor who said he was going to. I don't know how this works, but where the bank takes the loan back. You know what that is. Anyway, the bank
I'm not expert in those areas, but I know that they have short sales. They have all kinds of ways now to liquidate them.
Sure. So your question is probably what's next,
my
right?
Question is, what should we do next? Should we get a lawyer? Should we? I'm not sure what our next step would be because we co-sign, so that affects us.
Oh. Okay. Well, have you been approached by the bank?
No, we haven't. Other than the letter that we got today.
Okay, co-signing, you know, has consequences, you know, and I would get legal counsel on what your rights are under it and what the nature of the co-signing was. But generally, you know, you co-sign that you'll be responsible if the person who's taking out the loan, the bank looks at them and says, well, maybe you're not quite as sound of a client customer that we want, but if someone else will assure they'll pay the loan, you know, that's fine, we'll give you the loan. And so that's where you are today, and you just have to find out what your rights are, what your liabilities are. A lot of that will be in the contract, but I would get legal counsel as to what the next steps would be and how to protect yourself to the extent that you can, but you certainly want to, you certainly want to be faithful to the commitment that you made.
All right, Pam, we probably can't give you any more detailed advice than that, but hopefully you can find some good advice locally and make good choices and good steps on that process. 877-933-2484 is our phone number. And we're talking investments and the finances and the budgets and mortgages and all those kinds of things, retirement, all that today. With Ken Franke. Ken is the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. You can find out more at Ken Franke at Franke.com. Ken's a certified financial planner, and he was a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. Talking about your questions today. If you have some money questions, you can call us at 877-933-2484. Seven past the hour. Talking today with Ken Franke, who's the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. He's been a speaker, writer, and presenter on biblical principles of finance for a number of years, a certified financial planner, was a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors, which is a wonderful resource organization to help you find maybe an advisor in your area that is trying to advise via Kingdom principles and understanding God's design for money and stewardship, which I guess Ken brings up a question. Maybe you can respond to it. How do we balance the kind of the planning ahead versus trusting God to provide? I mean, there, you know, the market goes up and down, and we know that God is, you know, He's going to take care of us our daily needs. But you know, we can get worried, or we can rest. But it seems like we need to care for our family and be wise. So, do you have some general principles to follow?
Well, yeah, actually, this is quite easy. You know, planning ahead is trusting God. You know, we trust God when we obey Him, and obedience means planning. Just consider the outcome of this. Proverbs 21, verse 20, it talks about, you know, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. Now, on the very simplest level, the wise man had to make the decision and plan to save money so he would have a surplus in food and oil. Maybe he had other things as well, but he had to make the decision to live within his income on less than he earned so that he could build savings and have food and oil. So that was planning. He had to make that decision. And so planning, in my opinion, is something that is simply being obedient to God. Giving, planning your giving, is obedience, having a generous heart. You know, meeting the needs of your family and now and in the future. And as you plan and as you apply God's principles, you are being obedient. You're trusting God for the outcome. Outcomes don't always turn out the way we would like to do, but we're not dependent on those. The outcome is in the hands of God. We're only responsible for our obedience. And as we obediently plan, make decisions of how we spend money and where we give, how much debt do we have, what's our standard of living, and make those decisions within the context of God's provision, living within it, and what he's called you to do. He may have called you to do things that don't produce as much money or produce a surplus that allows you to be independent earlier on and work in the mission field later. But in order to get to a place of having stores of food and oil, as an example, obviously there are other things that it refers to, as opposed to the foolish man has that devours them, requires planning. It makes intentional steps to accomplish that. And that is trusting God. You're trusting God for the outcome for all the planning steps that you take.
Ken Franke joining us today, talking stewardship, finances, investments, some of those things. I don't know if this is an area you would know about, but Jack called in from St. Paul, says, I'm about ready to retire. I only have Social Security and a 16-year pension. How much will be taxed on that income?
I don't know the answer to that because it all depends on the level of Social Security that, you know, that a pension that you have coming in. When your gross income is over, I think it's for a single person, $45,000, but you got to talk to an accountant. This is not my expertise. They start taxing your Social Security. At some levels, if you're not at full retirement age, they actually may deduct the amount of Social Security that you get. But if you're full retirement age, you're going to end up having it taxed, a certain amount of it, depending upon your gross income. And those gross incomes, an accountant can tell you, or you can Google it and ask, you know, at what level are they going to tax your Social Security. But I couldn't tell you that off the top of my head.
Okay. Another question. Gary in Chisago City asks, can you comment on the Department of Labor and their ruling on the fiduciary standard? I don't know that I know. I'm up to date on that, so I don't know if that's something. I don't have any more details.
Yeah,
on that,
let me take a shot at it, and I'm going to assume, I may be mistaken, that she's talking about people within the financial industry serving their clients. Brokerage firms like Merrill Lynch and those large firms have resisted having, first of all, a fiduciary standard. If you're a fiduciary, you are charged with making the best interest on behalf of the client. They are your focus. You can't make decisions that are good for you. You've got to make them that are right best for them. Now, you may be rewarded for that in some way, but the decision's got to be something that's in their best interest. The brokerage firms have fought that as long as they've been around. They don't want to be fiduciaries. Independent investment advisors, just like attorneys, have to be fiduciaries. They have to make decisions that are in your best interest. And the Department of Labor, working with FINRA and all the regulatory agencies, have been wrestling with this for several years and whether they require brokerage firms to operate on the fiduciary standard of practice. I think they ought to. I think anybody that's functioning as a advisor with their finances should always put your interest first. And that's just my opinion. Obviously, an awful lot of people don't agree with that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of advisors, I mean, you were a founding board member and past chairman of Kingdom Advisors. That would be a good resource for someone looking for a financial advisor, right?
Yeah, I believe it is. You know, Kingdom Advisors has all types of people working within the financial community. We've got about 4,000 members. But the whole goal of Kingdom Advisors, which, by the way, It was inspired by Larry Burkett. I simply had the privilege of coming alongside of him. I mean, it was his idea, and he was inspired to do that back in 1996, to create an organization that would train financial people how to apply biblical principles in their own practices and in their counsel, and then how to encourage clients to apply them in their lives. And you can go to kingdomadvisors.org. I'm trying to think. There's a .org and a .com. I think it's .com. But if you go to that website, you can find what they call a qualified, somebody who's been through the training and everything, a qualified advisor in most local areas in the United States.
Yeah. There was a report out not too long ago that talked about fewer and fewer states are requiring economic education in their school curriculum. I'm wondering if you have some advice. You've got 4 children and, 11 grandchildren. So are there some things that you've done to kind of help your kids with a basic understanding of personal finance?
Well, you know, that's a two-edged question. You know, if they're in college and they're not teaching economics anymore, that's great, because the economics they're teaching in college doesn't work. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But if they're talking about basics, you know, budgeting and living within your income and things like that in high school, I think it's a shame if they're not teaching those things anymore. What we did with our children is try to show them the value of you know, having a banking account, how to save money, how to give money, and sort of make basic financial decisions, not necessarily sophisticated ones. But, you know, if you have your children, and even young children can get this, you know, if you have an 8- or 9-year-old and you're going someplace on a family vacation or a family trip for a day, and you say, okay, you've got to save $5 out of your allowance over the next week or whatever that is, 2 weeks, or whatever the allowance level is, in order to go on that vacation, and then they don't save it, they don't go, and they learn a lesson under the control under the safety and control of the home. So we used to exercise these things that could possibly be really disappointing to the kids, but they were manageable, and they could learn the consequences of not doing it. But we'd orchestrate them and plan those, not perfectly, but not all the time. But that's what we tried to do, learn that there are consequences to financial decisions. You do this, it works out good. You do this, it doesn't work out good. But even your very, very young children, you know, can comprehend that and can get that. And not to be legalistic about it, but just to get the principles down so they just become part of the way they think about money.
You suppose there's any way you could kind of carry on those principles, say, to members of Congress about consequences to spending?
Yeah, wouldn't you like to do that?
It seems like it probably wouldn't be a bad effort to make, because, wow. We do have some challenges.
I have a 9-year-old
us.
Grandchild that could go up there and teach him a lot.
Well, we wish him a good success in that trip, and I mean, he's probably saved for it as well. So, Ken, we're about out of time, so I don't know if there's any final word of encouragement you want to leave us, but I always enjoy talking with you.
Well, you know, the only thing I would say is this, that, you know, this is a time where fear and faith really compete with one another, but they can't coexist. You can't have one without the other. You can't have both. So I would say the number one thing for all of us to keep in mind is something from Isaiah 26, verse 3, where it promises to keep in perfect peace him whose mind is stayed on God. If you keep your mind centered on God, you will not only willingly, but you'll more readily apply his principles to your finances and all the areas of your lives, and you'll reap the reward of that.
Good word from Ken Franke, who's the founder and president of Kenneth Franke & Company. That's F-R-E-N-K-E. And you can find him, Ken Franke, at franke.com, certified financial planner. And he's been teaching on biblical principles of finance for many years, and we're honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. Ken, blessings to you. Thanks so much for giving us some good counsel today.
Thank you, Neil. I really enjoyed it.
Ken Franke joining us on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the program, or maybe there's someone you'd like to pass this show on to, just to offer some advice and encouragement, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. We post the interviews there, and they're all shareable, so check out the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com.